And now, like you allude to in the book at the end, is it possible that what's going on, how they're sort of revealing now that we thought there were subversives in the UFO community, and that's why we're watching you? Is it possible now that they're just doing sort of a backtrack move, where they're like, you know, we better come up with some plausible reason why we're watching these UFO guys, because we can't tell them it's because, you know, we want to find out more about UFOs, so let's tell them we were checking out to find communists or something?
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I mean, you know, that's one of the things I briefly touched on, was the idea that there's no doubt, you know, that everybody and his brother in the subject was being watched. The official story is that it's been done for, as I said, you know, subversive reasons and things like that. But, you know, it's not impossible. You know, I wouldn't fall down in a dead faint if it was proven that that in itself was a cover and that it really was purely just for the UFO angle.
Yeah.
And that this was like an ingenious ploy in the event that somebody uncovered details of it. You know, it's like, oh, well, let's just tell them we think they're communists or something like that. That would be a very good cover story. And, you know, it's something that when you're dealing with whistleblowers and government people and you're interviewing them, you know, you always have to be aware that they're only going to tell you what they want you to know.
Yeah.
And it is entirely possible that that could have been, you know, some sort of ploy to kind of downplay their involvement or their reasoning for being involved away from the UFO angle and towards something else. My own personal belief is probably that the Sandman and several other people overplayed the communist angle and underplayed the UFO angle. And I think in reality, it's probably both avenues were explored. And the reason I say that is because if it was purely the political angle, you wouldn't have, for example, the surveillance of alien abductees, you know, people who said they've been, you know, taken on board ships by aliens and probed and so on. You know, there's no political motivation there. And yet, you know, I've got a whole chapter in the book on the way in which alien abductees were watched. So that's quite clearly being done purely for the UFO angle.
Yeah.
So that actually is a good pointed towards the idea that this is being done in part at least purely for the UFO side of things. And that's actually one of the areas that Greg Bishop, a friend of mine, turns up in. Greg was corresponding with a well-known alien abductee and author named Dr. Carla Turner. And Greg told me quite clearly about how pretty much all the mail correspondence that they sent between the two of them arrived having been opened and, you know, resealed with scotch tape or whatever, and done in a really clumsy way, so the two recipients would know that somebody had opened it before it had arrived.
Yeah.
You know, and that suggests that somewhere along the line, you know, the post office was somehow involved, you know. I mean, I looked into this, and there are regulations where, in like a national security issue, government agencies have the right, you know, to walk into a post office and say, please check the mail from this address, and if you have anything outgoing or incoming, you know, you're to provide it to us, you're not to send it. You know, there actually are quite usable and regular ways in which that specific piece of legislation is used in England and the States. But again, you know, to do it in such a clumsy way as to just tear the envelopes open and just reseal them, that is done as like a psychological thing, I think, to spook the person out.
Yeah. And like you said, there could be two different groups sort of working. There's always a chance that one group may have been looking for the subversives and the communists while,
yeah,
you know, some of them may get filtered up the ladder to the UFO control group type situation.
Yeah, I mean, a good example of the specific UFO angle of all this with respect to abductions is how I talk about in the book. You know, a lot of people who talk about having been abducted are very often young women, you know, sort of late teens, 20s, 30s. And there's several cases I relate in the book, a number of which are taken from official documents where women had either reported seeing these balls of light outside the windows late at night, or in one case when a woman was driving home late at night in England in 1966 and this thing had sort of beamed some sort of light down to her car and it affected the headlights and did some damage to the paintwork and it gave her a feeling of nausea and she actually felt very, very ill. She got home late and told her parents, and somebody came out from a nearby Air Force base and investigated and interviewed her extensively, and there's a reference in there to somebody else who supposedly made contact with the people, the creatures, from this particular UFO. What it actually sounded like was some sort of covert group that was monitoring abductions and had figured that this late night drive home in which the woman had, you know, a car had been stopped and there were all sorts of these weird medical angles to it. This was like somebody fishing for what they believed was like an early alien abduction account. And there are several others. One I relate in the book from a woman living in Texas, actually. And she was actually personally visited by representatives of U.S. Air Force intelligence in the early 1970s, and, you know, was told outright that, yes, we have this project, and, you know, we're asking people who had this experience not to talk about the fact that we're speaking to them, but, you know, can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you, because we're concerned about citizens being kidnapped, as they called it at the time, before the term alien abductions, you know, was introduced. You know, we're concerned that citizens are being taken away against their will, and we want to know why these creatures are doing it and what their aim and their role is. So, you know, again, this has nothing to do with the political angle. This is just purely and simply a covert UFO investigative group, you know, monitoring people in the subject.
And now, somebody who's like a ufologist present day, like myself, could they check out to find out if they even have an FBI file? Is it something they have to tell you?
Yeah, the way it works is that if you want to get hold of an FBI file on you or somebody else, if it's somebody else, you either have to get their written permission, and they also have to supply something like a photocopy of a passport or a driving license, and they have to sign a letter saying, you know, I, John Smith, hereby declare that, you know, Tim has the permission to file a request for my file. Or if they're no longer alive, if they're dead, you can file a request yourself. You know, you could file a request for a researcher who died in the 60s. All you would need is to find an obituary to prove that the person was dead.
Yeah.
But if it's you yourself, you're quite within your rights to, you know, send a letter to FBI headquarters, to the Freedom of Information Office, and saying, you know, under the terms of the Freedom of Information Act, I hereby request access to any and all files held by the FBI on me, and I require that you send them to me, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes, actually, they'll admit to having them, but they won't release them. I mean, Bill Moore, who is the co-author of the first book on the Roswell story,
yep,
which was called The Roswell Incident, he filed a request for his FBI file, and even in the 90s, his FBI file was up to, like, 70 pages, and most of which was still classified. I think at the time he managed to get hold of something like 6 pages. And Stanton Friedman, a well-known figure in, you know, Roswell research, the FBI admitted to having a file on him, but they refused to tell or refused to reveal details of how long the file was, and they refused to tell him how what the classification of the file was, whether it was restricted or secret or top secret. You know, they wouldn't even discuss that. That shows the extent to which, you know, the secrecy surrounds not just UFOs, but people in the subject as well.
Like, do people tell you, like, if you talk to people and they're like, I've got my file, has it ever come up when you talk to other people, like, what you do with the research for the book and stuff, and is that something researchers do, or is that just something that they don't bother to try because they figure they're not going to get anything?
Yeah, actually, it's a lot of the latter. A lot of the time, people think, well, you know, I'm not going to get it, and they might charge me search fees for looking at, like, $50 or $100, which occasionally they will do. You know, they'll say, okay, we'll look for your file, but it's going to take us 3 days of manpower. Please send us a check, you know, $50 or whatever. So sometimes people don't do it. But, I mean, there are people who, as I said, Bill Moore vigorously pursued his, as did Stan Friedman, and really just didn't get anywhere. It is more often the case that the files that are surfacing are those that, you know, relate to people who died 30 or 40 years ago, like Adamski or people like Van Tassel and people like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if you're a living person and you think that you know, you've had some sort of experience, you're quite within your rights to file a request, and that the FBI is required to respond in something like 30 days to the initial request. I mean, it may take them longer to find the files and decide if they can be released,
yeah.
But they do have to confirm, you know, receipt of your letter. I mean, I'll give you an example. I filed Freedom of Information requests, and I received the files like 5 years later.
Oh, wow.
You know, but that sometimes it's due to a backlog. Sometimes it's just more that they take their time in determining can all the information be released, or then they have to check, you know, if it mentions the name of an FBI agent who was working for the, I don't know, the Los Angeles office of the FBI in the 1950s, they have to track down and see if he's still alive, and if he's still alive, or his name's got to be taken carefully excised from every single page of the documents.
Yeah.
And they have to do all that. Kind of like that thing, you know, the big controversy that broke, you know, with the naming of the CIA personnel a year or so ago.
Yeah.
It's like that. But very often you do get this sort of situation where people do file requests, but other times they just think, you know, what's the point? So.
Yeah. And like, what about when a pretty well-known person in the field dies, is there usually like a motion to try and get some information on them? And I'm thinking, I heard that there was something came out on Phil Klass, like right after he died.
Yeah, what happened was when Klass died recently, several people wrote to the FBI trying to get his file. And as I said, when a person's dead, anyone can access that or can appeal for that file to be released. You know, you don't have to be a relative, family member, or anything at all.
Yeah.
If they decide it can be declassified, they'll send it to you. But even with the Phil Klass file, you know, there were a few documents that were withheld. And there were a few references. I mean, we know Klass was involved in several things which just aren't in the files anyway, which suggests that, you know, they've either ignored the request or are just outright saying there's nothing in the files when we actually know there is. So
yeah.
That's problematic as well.
And what about guys like John Mack or Eugene Maloff or Betty Hill? Those three have died recently. Is it you're just not going to get as much information for like a decade or two afterwards, you think? Or
no, I mean, if a person, you know, dies and you want to file a request, you should act, if the files can be declassified, you should be able to get the stuff, you know, within a couple of weeks. You shouldn't have to wait 10 years or 15 years. It's just that, you know, I think it's just a case of finding people who are prepared to, you know, do the digging, and, you know, when the government says, no, we've not got anything, then just press further and to say, yeah, well, you know, here's evidence of an interview they gave where they said they'd written a letter to the FBI, so that letter must at least be on file with you. So where is it? You know, it just needs someone who can, you know, keep pushing and pushing. But I wouldn't be at all surprised, you know, if files did turn up on people like Betty Hill throughout the years. You know, as I said, it's just finding the person who knows enough about the case or the person and who's got obituaries and
yeah,
whatever to actually do that. So.
Yeah, it just takes the legwork pretty much.
Mm.
Now, based on all your research into the UFO field, what do you think is going on here? What does the government know, do you think?
I think as far as UFOs are concerned, I think there's two things. Well, actually, I think there's three things going on. I think there's no doubt in my mind that there's a genuine UFO mystery. You know, there's all sorts of theories that it's aliens, that it's, you know, something interdimensional that coexists with us. You know, you even have sort of the more extreme theories like time travelers or, but, you know, regardless of what the truth is, I'm convinced that there's an unknown presence, UFO presence from somewhere else. There's no doubt about that in my mind. I think some UFOs are, for example, you know, classified military aircraft that we don't know about. And I think the government, you know, uses the UFO mythology because it acts as a good cover. If somebody tests flies, you know, a next generation stealth aircraft, if somebody inadvertently sees it, you know, they start spreading tales about little green men and it gets forgotten about, or it gets derided and laughed at, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So that's the two issues. As far as what the UFOs are, I think you have the genuinely unexplained ones and you have unacknowledged advanced technology that we're flying as well. But I think the other area that comes into play is where the government itself actively spreads disinformation to confuse researchers and to send them down, you know, the wrong path. You know, researcher John Smith's looking into this particular case and he's going to uncover some sensitive material. So one particular agency then gives John Smith completely bogus material, but which sounds really fantastic, and it gets his attention, and, you know, he then chases down this completely fake path, and, you know, he forgets about the other material that's arguably more important.
Yeah, like what happened with Paul Benowitz.
Yeah, exactly, with Paul Benowitz, you know, he was looking into some interesting things, and then they deflected him into all sorts of other areas. So I think there's a lot of manipulation of the subject, but at the core of it, there is a subject, and it's a mystery, and it belongs to someone else, if you like.
And do you think that somewhere deep in the high levels of government that there is a core group that knows what's going on? Or do you think they're as clueless as we are, and sort of maybe whatever they knew 50, 60 years ago is starting to get lost to the generations?
I think for the most part, that, you know, government agencies that collect information, you know, often they report to higher departments, and the ones actually collecting the information, like in the special branch of the FBI, they may actually not know why it is that they're being asked to collect this information. You know,
yes.
It's like you say, Agent Smith, go out and sit in the audience, report back on what this person says, and file a complete report, and thank you very much. Then that goes up the chain of command. You know, when people talk about the government knowing this or the government hiding that, you know, the government is like a catch-all term for numerous agencies. And I think, you know, I don't believe for the most part, like the Senate or, you know, departments like that or the FBI, your average FBI agent probably doesn't know any more, probably less than we know.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is that this material is collated and collected and put together, and it does go to some sort of black box organization. Now, you know, some people have said it's this so-called Majestic 12 group, like an ultra-high-level organization that gets its funding through black projects where, you know, the funding doesn't turn up on the congressional record or whatever. You know, kind of like an Iran-Contra group.
Yeah.
You know, where it's untraceable, the funding's untraceable, and the membership's sort of unofficial.
Yeah.
Personally, I think something like, whether it's an MJ-12 type group or what it is, I think something like that exists, and it's to that organization that the information goes, and it's those people who know the truth. Now, it may not be a huge organization, you know, it may be 50, 100 people who are like the cleared elite, to know what's going on, and everybody else, just even in the military and the intelligence world, just has fragments based on what they're ordered to do.
Yeah.
But I do think, yeah, somewhere somebody knows the truth, and whatever that truth is, it's so either so fantastic or so disturbing that a decision has been taken that, you know, we can never tell people what it is. We can, you know, we just keep collecting information, watching it, and see who's talking to who. But as far as the material evidence is concerned, you know, there's some reason why it cannot be revealed. And one of the theories that's been suggested is that, you know, if crashed UFOs have been captured and there's evidence of really advanced technology, and we now perhaps understand the rudiments of that technology, it may be that, you know, the fear is if we introduce that technology into the world, it could actually sort of upset the economical state of the world.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if there is some sort of anti-gravity technology being hidden by the elite and it bankrupted the oil-making nations overnight? Well, I mean, the Middle East is a volatile place at the best of times.
Yeah.
But you imagine if all those nations, the oil-producing nations, were bankrupted overnight because this new technology existed.
Yeah.
That could actually
result
in, you know, an escalating war and even Third World War or something. If these people think they're going to be bankrupted and their entire country's ruined. I think that is one plausible theory, I think, that could lay behind the secrecy, not just the fact that these things are coming here, but the offshoot implications for world economies and even things like world religions and whatever, so things like that.
Yeah. You moved from the UK to the US?
Yes, my wife's American, and I moved over in 2001. She's from sunny Texas, which is where we lived. So.
Nice. I really like to lie to my listeners and claim that I'm calling you in England, but I won't.
No, it's still an American time, but yeah, we actually met at a conference. She has an interest in paranormal things, and she just happened to go along to this conference that I was speaking at. We got chatting and talking and just stayed in touch, and, you know, I'd come over here, she'd go over there for a month at a time, and, you know, we just sort of hit it off and just got together like that.
That's great. Now, your last book, Body Snatchers, that came out last summer, right?
Yes.
And that's a pretty quick turnaround for a new book from...
Well, you know, because I work as a writer full time. I don't have like a 9-to-5 job. I can sort of apply myself, on a full time basis to writing. You know, a lot of people are in the position, you know, they've got a full time job. They don't get home until 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And they can only do sort of an hour or so at night. You know, with me, it's my entire job. You know, I can sort of apply 8 hours a day, 9-to-5, on writing. So I try and get, you know, a book out per year if I can.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, just touching on Body Snatchers a little bit. Well, Body Snatchers pretty much offered an alternative view of what happened in Roswell in 1947. And now I'll confess that I haven't actually read the book yet. I've been so busy, and luckily I had a chance to read on the trail of the saucer spies.
Okay. But,
I heard all about Body Snatchers last summer. There was quite a furor over it.
Yeah, well, Body Snatchers was, I guess, one of these things that, it sort of made me, within the UFO community, it kind of made me the next worst thing to Saddam Hussein, almost.
That's
it was, my view is that, you know, there's no doubt that there's a genuine UFO mystery, but I think we need to examine each case on its own merits, you know, yeah, rather than lumping everything in one unified basket, if you like. But what happened was that from 96 through to about 2003, I interviewed a number of old-timers in the military and the intelligence world, mainly from America, but one from England, who basically said that the crashed UFO story at Roswell was a cover for experiments that had been, human experimentation that had been done, things like high-altitude exposure, balloon tests, you know, bearing in mind this was 60 years ago, determining what happens if you... you know, use people in high-altitude balloon tests, how is the human body affected, and things like this. And supposedly some of these people were Japanese prisoners of war brought over at the end of the Second World War and then utilized in various experiments. And it just so happened to be the Roswell one that leaked out because members of the public stumbled onto the crash. What I did with the book was to really put the story out so people could see what I'd been told.
Yeah.
You know, rather than to say, hey, you've all been duped. You know, that was never my, although some people perceive that's what I was doing, that was never my goal. You know, my goal was never to say, hey, I've uncovered the truth, and, you know, you're all idiots for getting it wrong. It was to say, you know, I've interviewed these people over the last 6 years. This is what they told me. Can we take it any further?
Yeah.
True. Is it the truth, or is it disinformation? So that's what I did. I put the story out so people could see, you know, what I'd uncovered, and some people took it on board. Others felt, you know, it was some sort of disinformation ploy to hide the fact that aliens really did crash at Roswell. And, you know, as I've said in online debates and, you know, at some of the news groups and on, I've never denied the possibility that I could have been fed disinformation, because as an author, I would have been the ideal person to get the story out there.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem that, you know, regardless of what individually we all think about Roswell, the biggest problem is the fact that it was 60 years ago, and literally pretty much everybody involved is dead.
Yeah.
And the files haven't surfaced, so it becomes a case of he said, she said, you know, I believe this, I believe that. And it's almost at that stalemate point where, you know, you can't bring back the dead.
Yeah.
So the only other way is to get the files. And if the files don't surface, we are left with these fragmentary old-timer accounts. One old-timer says this, but this old-timer says that. So that was basically what I did. It was a highly controversial, different scenario, but I put it out so people could see what had been told and really to see if it would open any other doors or if it would, you know, somebody would come forward and say, well, hang on a minute, you know, I was part of a disinformation scheme and I was responsible for this disinformation scheme. That's why I know it's not true and aliens really did crash. So, you know, and I felt it was important to put it out.
Yes.
So at least we would have leads that could be followed up on. But, you know, there's no doubt it's highly controversial, excuse me, purely because Roswell is seen as, you know, one of the, if not the premier case, if you like.
Yeah, were you surprised at the furor that erupted after the book came out?
No. I figured before, I was sort of braced beforehand that, you know, I was going to be castigated here, there, and people were going to be, you know, demanding blood and everything else, which almost happened. But, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, I think we need to debate cases, and regardless of what we may want to believe or not want to believe, if there's other information out there, it does require us to look into it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all of us in the subject are looking for the truth, but I think we need to be grounded. Sometimes it actually works to the government's advantage because, and this is not meant as any in a disrespectful way, but a lot of people are so full-on believers that they are in a particular subject or a particular case, that they become easy to manipulate because you can a government agent can tell them what they want to hear and they'll believe it.
Yeah.
When in actual fact, that's they're being manipulated. And so I think that although it's difficult, you know, we need to try and steer away from belief systems and kind of take a detached approach and just look for the facts, regardless of where they lead, and even if they say something, you know, we don't necessarily want to hear.
Now, it's been almost 9 months or so since Body Snatchers came out. Have any new leads opened up with that, or what? Any sort of new information come out since the book came out?
Yeah, I mean, there's been probably actually around about 20 people, either a few old-timers, or for the most part, family members who said, you know, my grandfather told me this and that, who suggested that supports that scenario. But in saying that, there are other people who've come forward who've said, you know, that back in the 50s, you know, and the late 40s, that whole scenarios are put forward in the event that they might want to be or need to be used, and one of them was this idea, you know, involving Japanese people, when in actual fact that was a cover. So, you know, it's kind of, that's again the problem, is that you've got credible people both giving contradictory views.
Yeah.
Now that's probably only because that's what they were told. You know, they're just telling me what they were told, and who knows who was deceived or who wasn't. So, you know, it's still a case that some people are saying, yeah, it's the truth, and others saying, no, you know, I know it was disinformation because I know one of the guys who was involved in this project. And it seems to be the case that if it is disinformation, that the story was put together back in the 50s but was never used.
Yeah.
You know, because it was seen as too controversial, because then it would attract too much attention, which arguably it would, you know, in some ways, using prisoners of war in high-altitude tests, ironically, in some ways, is more controversial than the idea that aliens might really have crashed. And so, you know, that's what several people have said, that this idea was put together decades ago and it was just shelved.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people have said that maybe my people, who I interviewed, genuinely believe it, but they've actually read the old disinformation files, not realizing that it was disinformation.
Yeah.
So it's like a really convoluted story, and I think, even from my perspective, it doesn't help me to say this, but unfortunately, I'm not entirely sure 60 years on we'll ever still get the answer, or if, you know, 100 years from now, people like me and you are going to be having phone conversations saying, huh, I wonder what really happened to Roswell.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that would be horrible if that was the case. It would be unfortunate, given all the work that's gone into it, but
yeah.
Unfortunately, I could see how that would be the scenario, you know, that it becomes a point where everybody is dead and, you know, the files can't be found. And I wouldn't actually be surprised, as I've mentioned to quite a few people, that today's government per se, the government, probably doesn't know what happened at Roswell. I think if anybody knows, it is like this small inner group hidden away somewhere. I'm not quite sure, you know, maybe they inform the presidents, you know, when they get elected. But your average person, even in the CIA, FBI, NSA, probably has lesser knowledge of Roswell than we do because they're not cleared to know. It's just this maybe 100, 200 people in this semi-official hidden group that do know the real story of what happened.
And like somebody at my message board joked, is the on the trail of the saucer spy sort of an olive branch to ufology making good because you went after the Roswell story? That's sort of
I don't know.
A joke than anything.
Oh, okay, but no, I mean even if it was a joke or no, I mean as I said, I think it's important that we treat each case on its own merits.
Yeah.
You know, and Roswell was a book on one case, and you know, if people take the information on board or they don't, that's fine. You know, I'm not going to have a sleepless night over it. You know, and with this book, it was purely a case that I found evidence that a lot of people in this subject were under surveillance, and so it's an interesting story. So let's put that story out. You know, if people take it on board, that's fine. If they don't, that's fine too. You know. You know, I don't feel a need to apologize for what I do, but I do feel it's, you know, all of us in the subject, if we've got interesting information, whether everybody else agrees with it or not, I think it's important to put it out.
Yeah.
So we can at least try and determine what the full picture is. So that's really the only motivation behind it.
Yeah. One other little thing I want to ask you about was this Serpo story that's been going around for the last few months.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you done much following of it or what?
I followed the story. I mean, this again, for some of the listeners who might not be aware, the Serpo story is it's a series of, like, an anonymous series of communications from a guy, or possibly more than one person, who had insider knowledge of supposedly some sort of exchange program in the 60s where some trained personnel, astronauts, if you like, traveled to an alien planet and, you know, to see their society and civilization, then came back and, you know, aliens came here and were studied, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the theories are kind of similar to my Body Snatchers book, that some people think it's verifiably real and this exchange program really went on. Other people think, you know, it's some sort of disinformation program for some obscure reason. The problem is, because it only really kicked off sort of last November, December, I just don't think, although there's a lot of information in, I just don't think enough research has been done to sort of answer the question fully as to what the motivations are, who was doing it, why they were doing it. I think it's something, it's definitely worth following because it is getting a huge following. And I think the more information that comes out, the more people that are interested, it's going to uncover more facts or fiction or whatever it is, or disinformation.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, although it's a great story, it's sort of too early stages to say too much. And that's not me, that's genuinely not me, you know, skirting around the issue.
Oh, no, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's just that it is so early that,
you know, put it in the grey basket.
Yeah, until we get more information through, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. What do you see for ufology in the near term and in the long term? I know from what you were saying in the course of this interview, obviously it sounds like you're obviously in favor of an open disclosure on the UFO secret or whatever, you know, some more information from the government on UFOs. Where do you see things heading in the next, you know, 5-10 years?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to open disclosure, like I've said to people before, at the height of the Cold War, you know, everybody, whether you're in England or you're America or Russia or wherever, everybody lived under the threat of nuclear war every day. You know, it never happened, thank God.
Yeah.
It could have done. And, you know, we didn't all sort of have nervous breakdowns and go run into the mental asylums or whatever. We just got on with our day-to-day living and hoped it didn't happen. And I think that even if there's some terrible secret behind the UFO thing, the same thing would happen. You know, can it be any worse than being annihilated in a nuclear holocaust, you know, whatever the truth is behind the UFO mystery. So I think in that respect, the public should know, because if we can handle the Cold War and threat of nuclear war, even if there was something terrible, which there might not be, behind the UFO mystery, we can handle that as well. So that's why I think there should be disclosure. As far as what the UFO research community should be doing, I think, you know, it's always valuable to log things like lights in the sky reports, or how many reports of this type of UFO have been seen, or how many sightings occurred over New York last year.
Yeah.
But I think the answers, if anybody's got the answers, I think it's going to be the government or government agencies. You know, they're the ones with radar, with planes, with the capabilities to investigate these things. And so I think that although, you know, the answer could come in any way at all, I think, you know, pursuing what the government knows is probably likely to provide more of the answers, because if anybody knows on Earth, they're going to be the ones.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other areas is like UFO crash retrieval stories like Roswell. You know, if anyone out there listening, you know, and this has been rumored on occasion, has, you know, fragments of the materials, you know, somebody's grandfather was at the crash site and stuck a little piece in his pocket or whatever, you know, instead of handing it in. You know, if something came along like a piece of evidence that could be tested, you know, if it was, you know, a finger from a body found at Roswell or a little piece of metal, and it could be analyzed for its DNA or its, you know, its the structure of the materials, that would instantly answer the question of, you know, is it extraterrestrial or not, if it contained, you know, unknown elements or the DNA was unlike anything on Earth.
Yeah.
That would answer the question overnight. So I think pursuing the government angle is one area that over the next 5-10 years, you know, that is vital. And also doing our utmost to try and uncover some sort of physical evidence that can be analysed and where there will be irrefutable proof that this couldn't have originated on Earth. And then, you know, you don't even need a full body. You don't even need President Bush or whoever standing up and saying they exist. If you've got this thing that can be analysed and proven, then, you know, we've answered the questions ourselves without getting the official answer. I think the one other area that we definitely need to kind of improve our status with is with the media. You know, the media, unfortunately, a lot of the mainstream media, you know, poke fun and make jokes about UFO researchers and the subject.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is because they're quite ignorant of the history of the subject. And I think, you know, things like press packages, you know, send out packages of press packages of documents and briefings showing how serious the subject's been taken and the credible people that have spoken on the record.
Yeah.
I think if journalists realise that, then we would have a better position with them, and the better position and relationship we had with the media, we would be able to get our message across better, and I think, you know, we would get more done. So I think that's an area that we need to improve on, is the relationship with the mainstream media, because, you know, they're the ones speaking to the public as well.
Yeah, so you think UFOs needs better public relations, pretty much.
Yeah, I think that would help a lot, yeah.
And are you hopeful that you'll get, like, a solid answer to the UFO question in your lifetime as you go along in this? Are you getting more hopeful, or are you sort of like, you're not at the point now where you're ready to throw up your hands and say, well, it's never going to happen?
I'm hopeful that we would get the answers, and I think diligent digging and searches will get the answers. I'm less hopeful that the answer is going to come from the government.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, people say, well, one day the government's going to release this information. But my argument is, what president is going to want to say, well, here's the information, but I've also got to admit we've lied for the last 60 years.
Yeah.
You know, unless the government had a reason to release the information, I don't think it would just go ahead and do it. So I'm less hopeful that it's going to, or less likely, I think, that it's going to come through the official angle.
Yeah.
But I think more likely, either an incident would occur that couldn't be denied, you know, the government would have to put its hands up and say, well, okay, you know, if there was like a crash in New York City or something like that,
yeah,
you know, and a UFO came down, or somebody had, as I said, you know, a sample of something, or something was leaked out of an official establishment,
yeah,
which was undeniable, or, you know, that it's down to us to find, you know, the UFO research community to find the answers and then present it to the media, who then, you know, publicise it, and then the government would have to admit to it.
Yeah.
So I think it's, you know, if the government's not going to say it, it's down to us, and I'm confident that we can find the answers, but I know for a fact that unless we really dig deep and dedicated to it, you know, it could slip out of our hands.
So what can we expect from you in the future here? What do you have in the pipeline?
That's a good question. I'm always sort of, you know, looking a year or two sort of down the line with books. One of the areas that I've been looking to, it's sort of an offshoot of the UFO thing, is the Chupacabras mystery.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in Puerto Rico. I've made a number of trips to Puerto Rico looking for and investigating this creature, that, you know, this sort of blood-sucking, half-alien, half-giant bat-type creature, as it's been described.
Yeah.
It's been seen in the vicinity of UFO encounters, and it's been responsible for numerous animal deaths. And I've spent a lot of time, you know, weeks at a time on the island, just tracking down witnesses, police officers, investigators. And the most recent trip I made was in September of last year. I went with a team from a Canadian TV company, and we spent quite a long time on the island, you know, traveling around and interviewing all sorts of... There's no doubt in my mind that there's something weird is definitely going on there, and something is loose, you know, in the rainforests and the jungles of the island. So that's what I'd like to get further involved in, trying to resolve that issue.
Yeah.
Or if not resolve it, at least, you know, get all the on-site information out. And that's something I always encourage people to do, is, you know, don't just take somebody else's word for it or just read books. If you're able to go out there and do your own investigation.
Exactly, yeah.
You actually uncover a huge amount, a larger amount of material than you ever would, you know, just reading books and even mine.
Well, what a segue. Well, the book is really good. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Well, thanks, Tim.
Yeah, it was just really fascinating. I really enjoyed a lot of the stuff, too, on the UK UFO scene, because you don't find too much stuff on that, at least on this shore.
No, you don't. That's one of the reasons, you know, I wanted to include that, because I thought, because it's actually quite similar to the American things, people might be interested to know that it parallels over there what's going on over here as well.
Yeah. And the book is On the Trail of the Saucer Spies, UFOs, and Government Surveillance, and it's available at all booksellers, right, online and in bookstores too, you think?
Yeah, wherever books are sold, good ones and bad, you'll find it.
Nice. Do you have a preferred way for people to get them, or just get them how they can get them? As long as they pay for them.
The quickest way is probably, you know, Amazon, or the publisher's website, which is anomalistbooks.com. You can just click on there, and there's links to Amazon sites all around the world.
Okay.
On the Anomalist sites. So that's probably the easiest way.
All right. And the other books are Body Snatchers in the Desert, the Horrible Truth at the Heart of the Roswell Story, Three Men Seeking Monsters, Covert Agenda, the British Government's UFO, Top Secrets Exposed, and Strange Secrets, Real Government Files on the Unknown. Those are your other books. And obviously the most recent one, On the Trail of the Saucer Spies, UFOs, and Government Surveillance. Check it out. It's an awesome book. Nick Redfern, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Thank you.
That does it for this week's edition of Been All of America Audio. Big, huge thanks to Nick Redfern for stopping by, giving us so much time, going so in-depth on his new book, On the Trail of the Saucer Spies. You can find more information about Nick, as he said, at his website, www.nickredfern.com, and that's nickredfern.com. Big thanks to Leslie, Chiron, and R. Lee of BeenAllOfAmerica.com for your help and support with the audio series. If you're a Been All of America audio listener and you haven't checked out their columns at BeenAllOfAmerica.com, you gotta check them out. They're fantastic stuff. If you're a frequent Been All of America audio listener and you want to discuss the audio series with other listeners, we have a message board. It's time I mentioned it on the show. There's a great community of listeners out there who hang out at www.theusofe.com. That's the official BeenAllOfAmerica.com message board. Once again, that's www.theusofe.com. TheUSofE.com. Pretty simple. Type it in. Go to theUSofE.com. That's where we're at. It is the United States of Esoterica, the BeenAllOfAmerica.com message board. Go there if you got questions about the audio series, you want to discuss the episodes with other listeners. Some guests pop in every now and again. You never know who's going to show up at the USOV.com. So if that's your thing, if you like the message boards, check it out. And if you're a longtime listener of Been All of America Audio and you want to help us defray some of the costs of producing the audio series, click the PayPal button at BeenAllOfAmerica.com. You can find it on the main page or on the Been All of America Audio page, either one. Click the button, donate a little dough, throw some change in the bucket, whatever you can do. Don't break the bank, but if you can help out, we greatly appreciate it. Next week on the show, the amazing author of the Federal Reserve expose, Thieves in the Temple, Andre Eglishon, turns his critical eye towards the national security apparatus with his new book, Where the Right Went Wrong on National Security and the Left Too. And he's coming to Been All of America Audio to discuss it with us. I read the book last week. Andre wrote the book. We sat down and talked about it last night. I taped the interview. It's going to be at BeenAllOfAmerica.com next week. In the interview, we're going to be talking about Operation Ajax in Iran and how it probably caused the Iranian angst with America, the NSC, NSA, and how it is used to circumvent Congress and their war powers, Iran-Contra, the war on terror, diplomatic exceptionalism, the mark of the beast, where things may be headed for the future, and tons more. It's a must-hear edition of Been All of America Audio with a true visionary of the big picture, Andre Eglishon. It's going to be next week at BeenAllOfAmerica.com, 4/22/6. That's the date. Be there or be square at BeenAllOfAmerica.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I got nothing left to say. Enjoy the weekend. Have a great holiday if you celebrate it. You'll be hearing from me next week. This is Tim Beenall, signing off.